One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode is Cues of the Force. The Q still stands for questions. We didn't turn it to, like, Quiznos of the Force or anything like that, although I am hungry. Also, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. You know, I don't like my sandwiches hot, but there was always something about a good Quiznos in the mall. But I used to enjoy the mid-2000s, though. So I'm with you on that. Questions, Quiznos, we got them all here.
We got them all. I think the problem is that sometimes the Quiznos sandwiches were hot and that was delicious. Sometimes they were clammy and that's not as delicious.
You can't do that when I take a sip of water, sir.
Clammy. You like your subs clammy? Come to Quiznos.
That's exactly. I will attribute you whenever I use that in public, but that is exactly the feeling I've been waiting to hear that description describe that sandwich for years. That's it.
Well, there you go. Some strong opinions about Quiznos. I had some great times with Quiznos and I had some clammy times. It sounds like Ken's with me. We want to let you know, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend Padawan by Kirsten White. It is a great young Obi-Wan adventure. Can't wait to dive all the way in. I read the first chapter and enjoyed it very much. If you'd like to give it a listen, You can download it by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. One more time, audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. Ken is the cover of the book Padawan with Obi-Wan's piercing blue eyes still staring at you.
It is. It's on a stack of comics that I haven't touched either. A lot of Star Wars material to get to. And I just downloaded Battlefront 2 on my new PS5, so I'm going to go back to that. That's going to bump some other things to play that game. So, sorry, but I'll get there. Padawan, I'm excited to get to.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoy some Obi-Wan snark. Did a child make that lightsaber? He says to Kylo Ren. So much fun. So much fun. All right, let's get into the questions because we have some great ones. As always, we have two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter and we go to Oscar Film Forecast. We like to think that that is Oscar's actual name and the human's name is Oscar F. Forecast. You know, the old eccentric billionaire, Oscar F. Forecast. Oscar says, "Hey, Ken and Joseph, I have a bit of a hypothetical question for you guys. So Lucasfilm has just hired a director who hasn't seen any Star Wars story ever to direct the next Star Wars film. Before they go off to write and make their film, they ask for your advice, and you have only a few minutes to tell them what you think Star Wars is all about, whether it be from a story standpoint or an overall thematic standpoint. What do you tell them? Keep up the great work. Every time you guys post makes my day. Thank you very much. That is very appreciated, and thank you for the great question. I think the key part here is we only have a few minutes, right?
Yes.
We can't just say, here is our just, you know, hours and hours and endless hours of podcasts, but we have to say we have just a few minutes. Ken, I want to jump on this one first because I think there's a possibility that we might have a similar answer, and I'm curious about that. So a couple of years back now, I believe in the year 2019, my friend and incredibly talented comedian Bill Corbett wanted to have me on his podcast to kind of talk about Star Wars. It was a little bit of the what's the deal with it? Like, Bill knows it. Bill likes it. Bill has a whole history with it. But he knows that I'm super all in, and he really wanted to have a like, what is it that draws people to Star Wars? So I made a list of what I thought were like the big ideas of Star Wars. And the one from that thought session that really resonated with me of like dialing down to hope versus fear, that so often Star Wars stories are about, the characters are faced with what's going to happen to them in the future. And you can either look at it as I'm so afraid of all of these things that might happen, or I'm so afraid I will fail. Or you can look at it as I'm going to do my best and there is a chance. And if I put this work in and if these other people are willing to work with me, I have hope that this can turn out better, that things can be better. This really big picture idea of hope versus fear. You and I have talked about it a lot on the podcast, and you have said some very elegant and eloquent things about hope versus fear. So I wanted to start from that point. Is hope versus fear your main answer to?
Yeah, I would yell at them like in a good way, like finding hope in the fear, or hope versus fear, you know, hope and fear, like hope. I really think that is it, and I think that's shared by a lot of people. And I always love saying, you know, 4Center, we do love going in so deep, and that's probably why Oscar Film Forecast is saying, guys, you only have a couple minutes, you can't do a 2-hour episode around this director. But it's simple, and sometimes I say we are just pointing at things that are there and going, that's it. That's the thing, getting excited about what the thing is, and the thing is hope. But you can't overlook the fear, and that's how you find it. And you go through that fear, you go through those dark times to get to the hope. So yeah, simply stated, that's where I would start the conversation. But then I would say, before they leave the Starbucks that I ran into them in or whatever, when I'm grabbing their hand and they're like, sir, I would just say, use that galaxy to tell us about this world. And just keep that in mind, which I think, a filmmaker or a writer, I think that's what they do. But it goes in that thinking of, you know, hearing Kathleen Kennedy say, yeah, I want these filmmakers, but I want them to tell their Star Wars, their story. I want it to be personal. You and I have discussed that time and time again. And doesn't mean we always know exactly. You know, I think Rian Johnson's, despite him being very open with his process and his themes and everything, and he's a great interview, but he still holds some cards close to his chest about what that movie means to him. And I love that. I love that all the time with filmmakers. So that's what I would say. Use that galaxy to tell us about this world.
Oh, I think that's a great answer. And yeah, I think Rian Johnson is a very great ambassador of films, of Star Wars, of his films. But I do also appreciate, as much as he's willing and seems to enjoy like sharing his process, mm-hmm. yeah, that he shares that reality of like, it's this is from the heart. This is from life experience. So for me, it's an intriguing thing to watch his whole filmography and look at the kind of ideas that pop up and ask yourself those questions. I think it's one of the things that makes storytelling of any kind, but Star Wars in particular, really powerful of what can we learn about ourselves through seeing how other people process the world. And then how do they process it through laser swords and fun, weird monsters?
Yeah.
I think if I had just a few more seconds before the director walked out of Starbucks, a couple other things I would shout at them very quickly. Bullet points. I would shout, characters can be cynical. Bad things can happen. Bad things probably should happen. But the message of the story at the end of the day should be symbiosis, kindness, empathy. We're all connected. We all need one another. Even if no character in the film learns that, it should still be clear to the audience that that's the perspective of the story of the creators. You know, and there's such a big difference when we talk about dark and gritty. Like, hey, give me the darkest, grittiest, most cynical character. Their perspective isn't necessarily the perspective of the story.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. And you and I and Jennifer on the news show were discussing the real world politics of the Andor series and Rogue One, and that could get into some impassioned controversial areas and some family fights at dinner. I understand all that there, and the darkness and the realness of, say, Rogue One or what's coming down the pipeline with Andor. I still think Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor holding on each other as they're about to die in a horrible explosion, I still think there's hope in there. I still take inspiration from it.
Absolutely. The guy who's willing to stick the plans through the door rather than save himself. The person being stabbed by Vader, that's hope.
Yes. And I say that that's one of those saying it to the mirror comments. Yeah. And I admitted on Tuesdays on the news show, I sometimes find myself like, I don't want anyone to love Andor so much that they then go, see, that's why the Porgs were dumb. Right. Like, and I get I get in this weird headspace, which I just can't. I gotta fight myself on that. But that dark grittiness does contain wonderful things of hope. That's why I get emotional over the Admiratus thing I've explained time and time again. I'll cut it short for those who have heard it before, but it's like, that gets me emotional because in this time of darkness, this decision to go fight to meet the problem head on is a certain kind of hope. So I think that hope doesn't mean just flowers and fireworks and Ewoks dancing.
Yeah, no, I so agree with you. And that would lead into the last thing I would attempt to shout. And at this point, the director is on their way to their car. I would shout that Star Wars, to me, has contrast. It has tension. That's one of the things that keeps us coming back. It is not, to me, a perfect thing. It is a table with three legs and it wobbles, and it's fascinating because of that. And that's why we come back. And, you know, there are things I've gone on and on about on the podcast, but I think that conflict between the past and the future, that Star Wars is grounded in tradition and ancient stories and also striving to do something new. So like the best Star Wars to me feels like utterly familiar and utterly shocking at the same time. It is the deepest, most serious mythic storytelling, and it is bonkers, fun, pulpy, adventure serial B-movie. It is action thrills and cool violence that is arguing for pacifism, peace, purpose. Those things are always, there's always like some tension there, and it doesn't have to be resolved always. It's what makes it fascinating and why we keep examining it.
Man, whoever this director is, they are going to have to avoid us in a coffee shop. That's what I'll say.
If you see us in a coffee shop, even if you're not directing a Star Wars film, just please don't bring up Star Wars. We'll get out of there. We'll get out of your hair.
Love it. Love it.
And thank you, Oscar Film Forecast, for the great question and the parameters to keep only a few minutes on it. So it made us nice and desperate. That said, Ken, did you have any final thoughts?
No, well done, Oscar F. Forecast Esquire the First.
Moving on to Daniel Mormack, also a great name. Daniel says, in the movies we have seen four super weapons, Death Star 1, Death Star 2, Star Killer Base, and the Sith Eternal Fleet. You are now the new leader of the dark side. Which super weapon do you choose and why? Each has unique features and drawbacks? Yes, they definitely do, Daniel. This is a very fun question. Ken, can you put yourself in the shiny boots of the leader of the dark side and pick one of these?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of choices today. We're getting a lot of power today in these questions. You have the chance to talk to our director or run the dark side. First of all, I would finally come through on the promise of dark side as cookies. Never once really seen that seriously dealt with in Star Wars. So let's do that. Okay. So I went two directions in this. I was like, well, those four clearly not worked. So maybe we have to come up with something else. And then I was like, of those four, what would I choose? I didn't realize what I was doing. I was going to create something new, a new super weapon called the Peace Policy. And it's just using a false version of peace to slowly crumble institutions and systems that would stand in my way. Then I realized, that was actually Palpatine's super weapon. That's what he already did. And thankfully, that one didn't work out either. So moving beyond that to those weapons and the choice there, I got to say, and it is kind of difficult to just say, all right, I'm in the dark side. Can I root for it here? I do think the Sith Eternal Fleet was great on paper. It's a mobile app version of the desktop super weapon. Take it with you. Do you not want to pay a lot of money for a Stream Deck to run your Twitch streams? Get the Stream Deck mobile app. Less money, less power, but you can still do the same tricks. And I think on paper, that was the danger. And as B-movie Saturday morning serial as I think a super weapon on every ship was. And I say that in a loving way. Like, it was kind of like bonkers, right? Like, let's just put them on every ship. And I totally get if some that rubs up against some folks, but I loved it. And that just added to the importance of what they needed to do on Exegol, because they get into the galaxy. Some did get out into the galaxy. Thank God for more Holdo maneuvers over Endor. That was part of the pressure. It was a dangerous plan. So I would, if I'm in the Second Order, which, by the way, is a joke they make in the Lego Summer Vacation movie, not my joke, I would go with that. We're going to do more mini super weapons on more ships.
Yeah, no, at the end of the day, I think you have a lot of great thoughts here. But I got to go with Sith Eternal Fleet because you know what? They can run away. You can hide some. You can hold some back. You can continue to produce them. And I think that is what is great about the story in Rise of Skywalker is, once they're out into the galaxy, like, great, we figure out that, they have this big vulnerability, that cannon. If you hit it, it's too much power and it leads back in and it can blow it up. Like, if they had got out into the galaxy and like, great, we blew up too. Well, here comes some more, I think it is an attempt to evolve from the Death Star. So I would definitely say like Sith Eternal Fleet is the way to go. And even if they blow up some, you can continue to produce them. My biggest no would be the Death Star, because I feel like, look, you tried it twice.
Yeah.
Really didn't work. Same fate, not too terribly far apart. I would also work on branding. Death Star, I get it. It's one of the things that makes Star Wars so, deliciously pulp and over the top. Yeah. And you can kind of even understand it from Palpatine's perspective. Like, if he thought he still needed the Senate, it would have maybe been called Empire's Security Center, like a name like a mall, right? But it's almost like he's leaning in of like, I don't even have to hide it anymore. It's called the Death Star. Deal with it. It's called the Murder Orb. Who cares? But I would definitely try to spin it a little bit with some propaganda. Yeah. I would definitely be like the Kindness Fleet. I don't know.
the true peace orb. You thought Boss Nass had a peace orb. It's so fun. Look, this is almost taking us into another direction here, but go with me. I love that you bring that up. I love that as dark and real and gritty we want our Star Wars to be, and we're going to get a lot of that in Andor, or as a lot of people are calling the series, Ander. I think it's important to never forget those roots. We're talking about the roots of Star Wars. Go back to, Van Nuys in the 70s, and you're building art pieces for this film that we don't even know is going to get made. It's crazy. And John Dykstra's over there with his big mountain man mustache, and you're building something called the Death Star. and then try to take that into an actual story. You're so right. It is Palpatine's way of saying it doesn't matter anymore. We've won. We're going to win even more. Call it the Death Star. And I'm sure, you know, there was meetings over branding issues over there. And he's like, nope, it's the Death Star. It's hilarious to me. It's so over the top.
It's so great. And I'm sure this joke has been made a million times, but mm-hmm. I definitely want to see the ribbon cutting ceremony after the destruction of Alderaan.
Yes. Yes.
That didn't have time to happen. Yeah. I also think my mind also went to about designing a new one. You know, I love them. We've talked about it before on the podcast. I love all of them because it is showing the lack of creativity, right? That it's just like build a gun to point at the entire galaxy. That they blew that one up. Build another one. Build one that's a planet that can shoot the gun from far away. Okay, put a bunch of big guns on a bunch of but it is just like it's this great metaphor for it. It's just fear. It's just point violence at somebody and make them fear it. But that said, if I were designing a new super weapon, I would really try to reckon with the fact of like, it's the hubris always gets us that it's too big. It can't possibly be. It has no vulnerabilities, right? Mm-hmm. I would have a poster on the wall of Han's quote from The Force Awakens. Like, I'm paraphrasing it. Like, there's always a way to blow them up, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd have like that on the wall and say, like, this is the goal. That's all we're trying to build. There can't be a way to blow them up. That's all.
That's all. That's all we're asking. Cover all exhaust ports. Make sure the scientists we're forcing to work on it don't have any ulterior motives.
Exactly. Yep. Check the motives.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Which, by the way, for the record, something I love. Just something that highlights the hubris of the Empire. I don't mind when that's pointed out every time.
Yeah. And the scrappy attitude of Han Solo. There's always a way. Any final thoughts on this question?
No. A lot of fun. I love the overtop nature of it. Clearly, I love the repeated themes in it. Clearly, it's fun to think. Fun to think of all those things. And glad I don't have this on my shoulders.
Yeah, no, I'm extremely happy to not have this responsibility. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Daniel, for letting us take a walk in the dark side. We're going to get away from that, though. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with our questions from our patrons on Patreon back in a moment.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And we are back to continue answering or attempting to answer cues of the Force. We go to our patron on Patreon, Jonathan Kenneth. Jonathan says, okay, this question may sound impish, but I promise it is sincere. In the Kenobi series, Obi-Wan had to endure the great post-Jedi Master trials of saving Leia, confronting his past, facing down Vader again, and helping Reva to realize her rebirth before he could commune with a Force ghost. Luke just had to get mauled by a snow yeti. Assuming that Force ghosts only appear in moments of absolute need, it's possible that Luke is just a bit pampered, yes? Okay, that's not the real question. The real question is this. Luke first saw a Force ghost without being a true, properly trained Jedi. Assuming Leia was capable of the same thing, do you think she ever saw a Force ghost? And if so, who and why? Great question, Jonathan. Thank you for the impish part and the sincere part. Ken, I actually want to talk about the impish part first. how do you feel after seeing Kenobi about when and how Force spirits appear and kind of the responsibility of the not the Force spirit or the Force ghost, but the person who is seeing them? What sort of training or place do they need to be in to make it happen?
This is a lot of even where my answer kind of lands on the different versions of it, but I continue it consider it an ongoing education for all of us and even the characters on Force Ghosts, right? And from what George intended in 77 to now, and even he's got thoughts on it that I think line up with what we learn later on in the show, especially show saga, I should say, not the show, including the Qui-Gon of it all in Phantom Menace. So I think it's on his mind. So I think it has everything to do with timing and mindset and not necessarily the skill level and points that you have on your Jedi resume. And I know that's not what Jonathan's talking about here, but I think it can vary. I think it can vary situation to situation and person to person.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it requires some amount of connection to the Force. But I think the person is still in the mortal realm has to be in the right headspace, right? Has to open themselves to the Force, to hope, to the future. If the Force spirits sort of represent mentorship in progress, right? Like that you have to be in this sort of headspace to be looking for that on some level, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it isn't, and I know Jonathan was having fun with it, but for me, it isn't about being fully trained or not. It's about kind of where you are in the moment. And I think Luke was opening himself, right? I think he's struggling and straining for the lightsaber in the Hoth cave that's out of reach. And he so stops himself and says, remember, there is another way. Calms himself. There's such trust in it, right? When he closes his eyes and concentrates. And then he's out there, you know, not looking good in the snow, wobbling away in a way that I very much relate to. That was some of my walks to school in Minnesota during the winter, is pretending to be Luke, trying to stay upright as my moon boots went into the snow. But I think he's striving toward the future. He's striving to survive, right? And that's when Kenobi appears to him and says, you're on the path. You need some help taking these next steps forward that you're trying to take. Here's where to go to take those next steps. You know, like that to me is really significant about what's going on in that communication.
Yeah, I love that. And part of some notes I jotted down for myself to try to make some sense of, because I admit, you know, it's like I said, it's an ongoing education, and new bits of information are going to add to our view on it here. And I think the Canopy series did some wonderful new chapters to this conversation. Mm-hmm. But even going back to New Hope and just hearing Ben, I'm with you on this idea of Luke's mind was clear from a certain point of view, and that because he maybe didn't know another way. And what I mean by that is, looking at Ben Kenobi, there were some obstacles in the Kenobi series, right? He's not clear. He's not focused. He's not on the right path. All those kind of things you're saying that I think apply to Luke and Hoth, even in his moment of, you know, being beaten almost by the situation, the wampa, the snow, the situation around him. Going to New Hope, like Luke is, you know, I don't want to say a naive. Well, he is a naive farm boy, but he knows the risks, but he's there. He's answered the call. And in that moment, he's there, and Ben has a clear path to him, right? Including going from run, Luke, run. That's a little bit more convoluted, but in that cockpit, in that X-Wing, Luke is on his path. He is moving forward. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. His mind is clear just because he hasn't learned of any obstacles in front of him yet.
Yeah. I mean, he has that moment of kind of being held back, hearing the voice of his uncle, you know, and he does answer the call. He wants to learn about the Force. He does feel something, as he says, when he's training on the Millennium Falcon. And then everything about Luke in the back half is that can-do attitude, right? Of like, we can rescue the princess. I care. Yeah, that shot can be made. Yeah, let's do this. Everything is so, like, forward moving, right? Open to possibilities. And I think that tracks with this way of looking at Force Spirits as well. And I think, I think the amazing thing about the Kenobi show is, adding more ideas and more layers, but I think it does line up of Obi-Wan is in a can't perspective, a didn't, we lost, it's done, right? It's not about his ability. It's not necessarily even about his knowledge of the Force or his strength in it. It's about his willingness to connect in it, to it, and his willingness to move forward, right? He removed this huge block. And I think his scene with Reva is so important. He's mostly counseling her, but he's talking about himself as well. And it is pretty explicit, you know, when he says, you know, you freed yourself. We both did, right?
Yeah.
It's literally like, I'm ready to, I was stuck in the past. I was frozen in a moment of grief and trauma. And now I'm ready to literally and emotionally move forward. Yeah. And that's when the dam opens for him and he gets to see Qui-Gon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No,
I think it's even there in like, it's not direct Force spirit. It's open to interpretation, in my opinion, but Rey not being able to hear the Jedi who've come before her. She really wants this and she's frustrated that she can't do it. And there's doubt about whether it can be done. And Leia tells her at the beginning, like anything is possible. And that's the great triumph for her in that moment on Exegol, that it is, she has the least reason to have hope. All of her friends are being destroyed. Ben, who came there for her, has fallen. All of the worst could come true, and she opens herself up to hope. And I think that's why she can hear the voices of the Jedi who have come before.
Absolutely, and I was going to add to what you were saying of like the new wrinkles of Kenobi are just kind of, you know, confirming some stuff that was there before, and it's just real simple stuff in terms of Kenobi. Yeah, just blocked in the soul, man. Blocked in the soul.
Yep, always with him, it could not be done. So getting into the Leia of it all, I wanted to confirm this, so I did some Googling and did indeed find it. In the Rise of Skywalker novelization, there's some great passages, a specific one, about Leia at least hearing the voice of Obi-Wan and Yoda. I'm just going to read this for anybody who hasn't read Rise of Skywalker novelization, or like me, it's been a while. Here's the passage. Leia was no Jedi master, but she had learned from the best, and not just from Luke. Over the years, she'd occasionally heard the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi through the Force, and even more rarely, that of Yoda. Some days it had felt as though she'd learned from the Force itself. She was first and foremost a politician and a general, but she had accepted her Jedi legacy and embraced it as best she could. So I think there's a lot there that's really fun to look at. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm glad you pulled that in. It's been a while, and I love that version. Ray Carson's novelization, solid, man. It's some great stuff. So I love that. Look, I've always think she's going to have she's been picking up on vibes and visions, right? And that's kind of the whole return of the Jedi of it all. So even if it wasn't there, but that makes a lot of sense. Cause I think too, going in this conversation of being on your path or being open to what's going on in front of you, I think Leia has been on her path for a long time, right? Even without the Kenobi series, we could have said, you know, we've got Leia, Princess of Alderaan, some other material, but we could have, she was a young go-getter, right? she's got some skills. So again, I don't think her mind was blocked to seeing anyone at all. But along the way, it just makes a lot more sense for what happened later on. And I definitely go to Ben Kenobi. That makes a lot of sense. I got to think he would say hello there at any point, particularly between Empire and Jedi. Leia was really dedicated to this cause, but that cause is on the ropes. And, you know, the rebellion is on the run again. The Empire has struck back. The person she wants to love is in a block of carbonite. It's a dark hour for this Princess of Hope. And now knowing this, again, additional information that Ben Kenobi could show up to remind her that the Force is like a light being turned on in the dark is a grand idea to me. Mm. And it doesn't have to cross any canon wires. It doesn't have to be, by the way, you're related. She's going on feelings at the end of Empire. And she might not fully understand at this point. It's Ben. It's a Force ghost. I don't have the Force. She doesn't need to. She could just go with these feelings, these vibes, these visions, and the actual maybe Force ghost of Kenobi kind of coming to her at this time of need during that time when things seem to be falling apart.
Yeah, no, I love that, and I love that. You know, the story of the original trilogy really feels like Obi-Wan believes Luke is the person to move this forward, and kind of I take from that a real understanding of Leia's choice of destiny, right? That mm-hmm. he sees when she's young that she is a born leader and she wants to make choices about how she's going to lead. So I really choose to see it as like Luke's got this destiny and Leia chose hers and she has so much to do as when mm-hmm. she is going to become a leader, a politician, a general, right? What I really like in this passage is this last sentence of she was first and foremost a politician and a general, but she had accepted her Jedi legacy and embraced it as best she could. So that sentence kind of goes to what we've been talking about of she's not actively training to be a Jedi, but she is open. Like mm-hmm. she's always been a person who is open to hope, open to the possibility that there is a better way forward, open to, making sacrifices to find that other path forward. So she's always been a forward moving person, even in her darkest times. Yeah. But this idea that once she is trained with Luke a little bit and like, I'm aware that this is a path I could go down. It isn't for me, but I am aware that I am fully connected to this thing, you know, this cosmic power, that level of awareness and opening would allow her to hear Kenobi and Yoda. And this passage is nice and, you know, ambiguous. You know, she'd occasionally heard the voice. Is that like a voice from a past? You know, is she hearing, you know, little, this weapon is your life? You're like, begun the Clone Wars. Like, is it literally them whispering advice? Is it fragments of the past? Is it a full sit down log talk at any point in her life? This passage leaves that open. So I think at the end of the day for me, now that the Kenobi television show has come out, I would love somewhere in canon to have Leia later in life having a full commune with Obi-Wan.
I absolutely would. Eh? We have that the ability to tell that story now, which mm-hmm. we didn't before because we didn't know those details. And just goes to how I look a lot of it. I know you're in line too, of just like new information comes and sometimes it challenges what you thought before, but think of the possibilities that are now in front of you of the story and these characters we love. That'd be amazing. Especially if it was like, older Leia, Last Jedi era Leia, you know, between Jedi and Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, where she's just like, she's going to say what she's going to say. And you got old Kenobi talking to her. I love that. I'm just imagining Alec Guinness and Carrie Fisher talking.
Oh, and that is powerful. Yeah, and this excerpt comes from early on when Rey and Leia are training, and Rey is kind of dodging some of the challenges she's feeling by asking Leia about why she moved on from her training. And Leia's kind of thinking through who Rhea is as a student, how she doesn't want to fail her, who Leia is a master. It's a really great passage. Any other thoughts on this great question?
No, great stuff. Love thinking of it. Love continuing to learn about it as well.
Exactly. And we move on to our final question then from Stephen Campbell. Stephen says, hello, Force Center. One of the best parts about revisiting Star Wars content is picking up on things that weren't noticed during previous viewings, whether it be themes, lines of dialogue, or background catches. I always find something new with each revisit. Around 2015, I noticed that the music from Augie's Great Municipal Band at the end of The Phantom Menace is actually the Emperor's theme sped up. Since learning that, revisiting that scene has had so much more layers of meaning. What is one of your favorite catches that you noticed after not noticing them from previous viewings? And how have they impacted how you engage with what's being presented? Thanks, and may the Force be with you. This is great, Ken. I think we've talked about definitely like kind of little fun background things. And we've talked about big, deep things of pick up on what was being laid down. Where does your mind go on that spectrum from the fun background thing to, oh, whoops, I missed the meaning?
I think I went to the oops, I missed a meaning ones only because I talked about that weird gonk droid from Empire recently. It's just something I'd picked up on. Yeah. And remember, we were discussing some Phantom Menace stuff where I saw some of the pod racers earlier that I hadn't seen before recently. And I was like, that's fun. No, and I love it. I love all that kind of stuff. And it's always going to happen. And I want to say, too, by the way, if you're like, especially if you're a longtime Star Wars fan, and when this happens, have no shame in that. Have no shame. We're like, never knew Palpatine was wearing slippers there, which, by the way, I don't know if that's true. Because I think there can be some shame attached to that. This quest to be the trivia master, which is a great thing on its own. Just enjoy it. Enjoy that this property has layers and you can see it. And I can't remember when exactly. There's been some specific times where I've been like, oh, I get it now. And then there's ones that just happen over the course of time. I call this the General Solo factor, which is, you know, how Han joined the rebellion right then and there in Return of the Jedi with General Solo as your strike team ready. I don't know what paperwork he filled out before. And this comes a little bit from the Empire Strikes Back novelization, which, you know, you could say canon light at times, you know, those novelizations fall into weird spots. And just the ongoing conversation around Han that even I get in debates at bars with friends or acquaintances or colleagues over some of Han's and the themes in Han's life. And that was, I go back to growing up, just assuming at the end of New Hope to the beginning of Empire, Han fills out the HR forms. He's in the rebellion. He's there and just things happen along the way. And just getting the whole situation, that whole moment kind of recontextualized, both rereading the Empire novel and focusing on that and just seeing Han's life. And now going back to that, and there could be little details here and there, but that he, you know, he's Captain Han Solo, the Millennium Falcon in Empire Strikes Back, but he's General Solo in the Rebellion because he's there. He's going to be on the fight. He's going to be on the ground. And that's why Leia turns to him and is like, oh, man, you know, I'd never thought that this man that I want to love, right, and does love and has admitted this at the end of Empire, but he's here, right? He's here. He's part of this fight. He's going to be there, and I'm going to be there with him. It's a powerful moment that I just didn't grow up seen or getting the full scope of because I just, hey, he's one of the good guys. He won a medal. And it just, as I got that and I was a little older, it just made me look at a lot of things in Han's life and just what it means to join the rebellion or commit to the cause. That's changed over the years for me. That's a big one for me.
Yeah, I think the power of that scene is that he's all in. Mm-hmm. With no question after the experience he's had, and he hasn't told Leia yet, right? He hasn't really expressed or shown her yet that I'm all in. And like, she's used to the Han where like she gives him a mission. We see this a lot in the comics, the Marvel comics, you know, more modern ones between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back of like gives him a mission. He's like grumble, grumble, I guess, you know, banter, banter, grumble, grumble. Right. But so the idea that he would volunteer for a vital, dangerous task without even telling her about it and just announce it all loud and proud at the meeting, you know, I really love hearing you talk about it because this is definitely one of those. I swear, younger fans, it happened. It was a moment that some people didn't like. They wanted rogue, cool Han Solo who kind of didn't care and maybe admitted he loved the princess. But like, who's this guy who's showing up to work on time, you know, pouring coffee for the boss? What a straight-laced loser, you know? Yeah. Yeah. That was some criticism back in the day that people wanted their roguish, I don't really care Han Solo. And this guy who is suddenly all in is like, well, that's not Han Solo. Like, that was a criticism that went around pre-internet days. You had to be on the playground to hear that one. It's really great to hear you talk about it from the positive perspective.
yeah. And again, maybe this question, maybe Stephen's question is more about you're sitting down in one particular viewing and you go, oh, I think it was just a series of events that just go, oh, you know, as a kid, I saw, obviously you're going to see that a little differently. And it just made it a little bit more powerful in the journey. And also it fueled many arguments where I've been like, no, yes, Han doesn't love the Empire, but he also doesn't, he's indifferent to a lot of the causes, right? And this is pre-Solo and post-Solo, a Star Wars story where it's like, you know, yes, the name he gets from an Imperial officer, but that it comes from an Imperial, he doesn't care. He's on his own, you know, forming his identity, his own journey, and joins the GD Empire. he doesn't care. He just wants to have everything serve his purpose, his goal. And then you go back to Jedi, and that's why it's also equally as powerful to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some great arguments for like a Finn Han connection. Like, how much is he there at the end of A New Hope for, you know, Luke and Leia? And like, I guess I'll accept the cause because that's where they are.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I want you to jump in there, but that's funny. My next note, it made me think of that, and it's the months after Force Awakens. This idea that Finn goes back to Starkiller Base on kind of a lie to save his friend is, I think, overlooked a lot in the conversations around Finn and his arc and his journey, but also one of those moments where I was like, ah, okay, yeah, you're right. He picks up that blade for Rey and the journey continues. It's not repeated later. It's a forward movement thing there. So that's funny you've mentioned that. It absolutely made me think of that.
Yeah, because they're both journeys of being caring about people, not liking the big bad, but then being truly all in.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great. Yeah, I love this question because there are so many surface things for a while there. It's the way I would watch the original trilogy is like I would sit down to watch it and say, like, what? I'm going to watch the corners and see if I can see something I haven't seen before, you know, and often feeling rewarded by finding some little thing, you know. And there are lots of moments of discovery that were honestly a little bit more pre-internet days, pre-social media days, things like that. I remember the first time I noticed the stormtrooper hitting his head, right?
That's a great point.
You know, noticing that it took me a long time to notice that Luke was actually in the AT-AT when he's dropped off at Return of the Jedi. I hadn't seen that. I remember the first time I saw the Sith probe bobbing behind Qui-Gon and Watto during their conversation and knowing that's the moment that it spotted them, you know?
Yep.
All those kind of things. I know I've mentioned this recently, including, I believe, the last Q's episode. I try to watch with the 3PO eye because 3PO is always doing something great. In A New Hope, the aggressive thigh rubbing. A thing I really like to concentrate on when I'm watching Return of the Jedi is when Han and Leia are discovered by Jabba and his crew and that curtain comes back, that Reese is aggressively clamping 3PO's mouth shut because of course he's going to be the one talking, you know?
That's a great pull. Yes.
And then, when Jabba says Bantha Poodoo in that same scene, Bib does this big, wide open mouth gesture that is totally the dog laughing meme. It's exactly that, you know?
Love that. Yes. Rewards of looking at Bib's face.
There's endless things to notice in the background. And I'm totally with you. There is no shame in not having seen something before. Even if, you know, hey, I'm the 1% of people who it took forever to notice X. Who cares? You discovered something fun and new. It's, you know, anyway. Mm-hmm. For me, the sort of a big moment that came to my mind for changing how I felt about things was seeing Return of the Jedi in a new light, seeing a scene that I knew well and was like, I know what's going on here. It's great. I have lots of thoughts on it, and it being recontextualized. Mm-hmm. It's the moment where Vader's great line, your feelings for them are strong, particularly sister. So you have a twin sister, you know, if you will not be turned, maybe she will, all that. That's what's happening in that scene is crystal clear and powerful in 1983 when the film comes out. You know, I'd watched that film a million times. The prequels come out and I start kind of rewatching them more once the fervor dies down and, you know, finding myself thinking about them and appreciating them more. And one of the rewatches of Return of the Jedi, I can't even remember when exactly this was, you know, in the 2000s, watching Return of the Jedi in that scene I know so well and having the dime drop that Vader's trying to break his son the same way he was broken.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those moments that made me so fully appreciate what was going on in the prequels, how they were speaking to what happened in the original trilogy from not just the canon perspective of who knows what, when, how old are people, what happened to his eyebrows, not the surface stuff, but the deep stuff and how powerful, how much more power it adds to an already powerful scene in Return of the Jedi. Like I said, it works great in 1983. It's perfectly clear. But then when you get inside Vader's head and he knows, like, the goal is to break my son. I know the cycle of how the dark side works. Threaten a loved one because the fear of loss, they will reach for that anger, and then I'll have them.
I'll get them. Yeah.
I'll get them. And knowing, I'm just going to do a fast version of what was done to me to my son real quick. It's really, really powerful, and it says so much about how Anakin fell and what the dark side is, and it just really made me say, I got to pay even more attention to those prequels.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well said. Well said. I mean, that's a series of podcasts in itself. Right. Right.
But yeah.
And I love your point. They work at both times. And why I will be a little bit on banging the drum on being open to additional storytelling and having it kind of change some of the information or change things, you know, hey, I always thought it was a little weird that Leia yelled Ben Kenobi when Luke said Obi-Wan Kenobi was here. I always thought that was a little weird. And now look at that. We have a different version of it. And now there's so much cynicism around the idea of, there was nothing in Leia's pre-recorded speech that made us believe that she had been on an adventure with Ben Kenobi 10 years prior, right? Like, yeah, you're right. I didn't grow up with that in my head too, but now we have that and we have additional storytelling and more information. And now something I grew up with, A New Hope, has more meaning and more power to it than I could ever have imagined prior to the start of that Disney Plus series. So that's the journey I love going on. I think you're so right. I think the poetry that we can also see made fun of a lot on Star Wars. So powerful in the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy and some of the reasons I keep coming back to it to learn more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think Leia's story in the original trilogy, her relationship with Ben was and Obi-Wan was always clear of like, here is the hero of old. That's who we need. I really enjoyed the Ben Kenobi from the perspective of like Luke Skywalker. Who cares? Yeah. But Ben Kenobi is here. Great. Always had that kind of the what am I chopped liver kind of comedy from Luke's perspective, the way she gets so excited about Ben Kenobi. But now it has this additional meaning and it isn't about fixing it. It's about, yeah, adding more meaning to what already had meaning.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. Excellent. Great question. Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you also to Jonathan, Daniel, and Oscar F. Forecast Esquire. That is our questions. We don't have a Power of the Light Side entry. I'll keep mentioning this for the next couple of episodes and see if anybody is interested. If you are a patron on Patreon, you can go to the posts page and just scroll down a few entries, and you will see a call for entries, Power of the Light Side. Send us a submission if you want. This is just an opportunity for you to share something that you enjoy about Star Wars. Could be a fun surface level thing. Could be a fun memory of a time you shared with other people because of Star Wars. Could be deep and meaningful. Whatever you want, as long as it celebrates the light side of Star Wars. So check that out if desired. Ken, where can people find us?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sorry, I cut you off there, Mike.
No.
I will let you all know this. We are the Force Center Podcast Feed. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Thanks for those who are joining us for our live Q&A. So we'll have another one this month. We'll let you know when soon. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. If you still choose to use Facebook, and we know a lot of you do. Podcast is available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. If you want to rate and review us at any of those spots, just, hey, you know, we'd appreciate that. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/4Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/4Center. From there, you can get into our Discord. We can have a daily conversation with 4Center friends. You can find me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com, for more information. We are entering a new season of Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon discussion. It's a new era. If you want to get more on that from me, you can follow my podcast, Casterly Talk. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, as at Joseph Scrimshaw. That's my handle, all those places. So come check that out if you're interested. If you want to find out about all my other comedy adventures, past, present, and future, you can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com. In fact, the day this podcast releases, hey, I am in Minnesota right now. I'm in Minneapolis at the Great Convention Convergence, doing a bunch of panels and shows on Friday night. I got a stand-up show, so come see that if you are at Convergence. Again, all those details on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Leia, and Quizno Subs, this has been 4Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.